on a battlefield in an armed conflict, we can...
El reconocido abogado señala que quizá nadie disputaría que en un conflicto armado las tropas estadounidenses disparen a matar contra alguien que está abriendo fuego contra ellas, sean norteamericanos o no. Pero cuando se va a Yemen, a más de 1.500 kilómetros de una batalla, para dar muerte a un ciudadano norteamericano sin haber estado en un ataque en el momento de darle muerte, eso, dice, es cuestionable.
There has been a long tradition in the history of the United States. Of using murder.
Gerald Horn es historiador, escritor y activista. Él dice que en Estados Unidos hay una larga historia del uso del asesinato como arma política. Solo hay que ver lo que le han hecho a través de las décadas y los siglos a los líderes indígenas. El escritor luego habla del libro 538 formas de matar a Castro.
It's about the hundreds of attempts since 1959 to murder.
Añade que es un libro que trata sobre los cientos de intentos desde 1959 de dar muerte al expresidente cubano Fidel Castro. Ya se conoce el papel de Estados Unidos en el asesinato de Salvador Allende en Chile, el asesinato de Patrice Lumumba en el Congo. Así que no llega como sorpresa que la actual administración haya actualizado y extendido esa vieja política.
Certainly this idea. Horn
señala que la idea de darle al gobierno estadounidense el nombre de empresa para asesinar, como si fuera una pandilla criminal de los años 30 y que puede ejecutar a sus adversarios donde estos estén, te parece que se ha retornado a la ley de la selva y no tardará mucho para que esas políticas toquen las vidas de aquellos que piensan que son inocentes. En todo caso, es perturbante, dice Horn. Todas las personas de mente justa en el país, así como en el resto del mundo, deben levantarse condenando esa política infame. Wafter Tarpley es autor de Sobreviviendo el Cataclismo, un libro sobre la crisis económica actual.
It has occurred to me during my visits to Libya, to Syria, and to Iran in the last 6 or 7 months.
Él dice que ya le ha pasado por la mente en sus visitas a Siria, Libia e Irán en los últimos 6 o 7 meses que cada vez que sale de los Estados Unidos puede ser asesinado por fuerzas norteamericanas.
The U.S. government claims the right to kill you anytime it wants, and I think that.
Agrega que Washington dice que tiene el derecho de quitarle a uno la vida cuando sale del país, pero piensa que también lo pueden hacer cuando uno está dentro de sus fronteras. Además, dice, el presidente puede, bajo el Acta Nacional de Autorización de Defensa, ordenar el asesinato de cualquier persona o enviarla a prisión de Guantánamo y torturarle para siempre, pues se sabe que Guantánamo no solo es una prisión, sino también una escuela de terroristas. La abogada Isabel García trabaja con la Coalición de los Derechos Humanos en el estado de Arizona.
Es una posición muy, muy peligrosa de que hoy en día ellos puedan decidir no nomás de arrestar a una persona, de hacerles cargos, de ponerlos en la prisión, sino que alguien, no sabemos exactamente quién, va a hacer esa decisión y sin autoridad ninguna, además de esta ley que sí se les va a dar, pueden matar, asesinar a una persona ni estando en el país. Es decir, son medidas extraordinarias que nos pone en una situación mucho, mucho más peligroso en vez de ayudarnos.
This will never end until we can put together a refutation of the 9/11 story. For this, I hope people will look at the fifth edition of my.
El escritor Wafter Tarpley asegura que el estado de cosas actual no va a terminar hasta que la colectividad arme una refutación de la historia oficial del 11 de septiembre. Además, espera que ahora la gente se tome el tiempo de leer la quinta edición de su libro sobre el 11 de septiembre, el mismo que documenta 46 maniobras, actividades y ejercicios militares del Pentágono, la CIA y varias agencias federales, a través de las cuales los ataques de ese día fueron preparados y conducidos cuando esos ensayos se tornaron reales.
It comes from the secret circles of imperialism, the thing that brought you the Kennedy assassination or Iran conflict.
Tarpley dice que la gente tiene que dejar de creer la historia de conspiración de Al-Qaeda y darse cuenta que esos ataques vinieron de los rincones secretos del imperialismo norteamericano, vinieron de las mismas fuerzas que estuvieron detrás del asesinato del presidente Kennedy, del escándalo de Irán contra, de la invasión de Playa Girón a Cuba, del incidente del Golfo de Tonkin en la guerra de Vietnam. En otras palabras, la telaraña que une a Wall Street, el Departamento de Estado y la Central de Inteligencia.
It's not an organic or sociological response to anything the U.S. did.
El escritor concluye diciendo que los trágicos ataques del 11 de septiembre no fueron la respuesta orgánica o sociológica a algo que hizo o que no hizo Estados Unidos, sino más bien fueron el sector financiero con sus operativos tomando la iniciativa para crear un enemigo nuevo después de acabarse la Guerra Fría. Como no podían seguir usando la guerra contra el comunismo contra Rusia o China, dice, tuvieron que fabricar un enemigo nuevo, y eso es precisamente lo que hicieron en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
En noticias de México, la Cámara de Senadores aprobó la Ley del Registro Nacional de Datos de Personas Extraviadas o Desaparecidas. Esta tiene como propósito crear un banco de información sobre personas desaparecidas y dar seguimiento a los casos denunciados. La Comisión Nacional de los Derechos Humanos en México registró entre el 2006 y abril del 2011 más de 5.000 expedientes de personas reportadas como extraviadas o ausentes y cuenta con datos de 8.898 fallecidos que no han sido identificados por las autoridades. Laura Simón reporta desde la Ciudad de México.
Con su foto en la mano, Rosy busca a su hermano, José de Jesús Lara, taxista de oficio, desde el 7 de octubre de 2011. Cuando desapareció en una calle de Saltillo, Coahuila, al norte de México.
Nos dimos a la tarea de buscar en la policía, en los hospitales, en el CEMEFO, en todas las dependencias, buscándolo, y pues no tuvimos respuesta.
A pesar de la angustia, exige a las autoridades que lo encuentren. Cuando faltan apenas unos meses para que termine el mandato de Felipe Calderón, que inició en 2006, el Congreso mexicano aprobó la ley para crear el Registro Nacional de Datos de Personas Extraviadas o Desaparecidas.
Esta ley, que me parece que por los momentos que pasa nuestra patria, es de suma importancia. No debemos de seguir permitiendo que cuando desaparece una persona, solamente pase a las estadísticas. Debemos de inmediato buscarlos, encontrarlos y regresarlos a su hogar.
Los legisladores reconocieron que se multiplican las denuncias, no solo por desapariciones atribuidas a la delincuencia, sino de aquellas donde estarían involucrados policías, marinos y militares.
No solo con el fin de conocer el número de personas desaparecidas o extraviadas, sino también para darle un nombre y un rostro a las víctimas de la violencia en nuestro país y buscar que a cada caso se le dé un seguimiento adecuado.
Una demanda de miles de familias en todo el país. Laura Simón, Telesur, Ciudad de México.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Sandino es dedicada para el general Sandino, el que a nadie le ha hecho mal Sandino, el patriota de Latinoamérica Sandino, Augusto César Sandino Sandino. Soy un hombre sincero Sandino, de donde crece la hierba Sandino, y antes de morir me quiero Sandino, cantar mi canción de
This is Augusto Cesar Sandino II. Just reminded you to tune in to the Global Local program every Monday night from more or less 6 to 9 p.m. and occasionally beyond. Bringing you revolutionary news and views and analysis, sometimes, but always bringing you the kick-ass music you won't hear anywhere else. Every Monday night, 6 to 9, with your DJ Augusto Cesar Sandino. Check it out.
Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
And don't forget to tune in, too, to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's easy to do because it's coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Going to be 2 hours of the show with you tonight. I'll be here, and I may be alone, but I'll have lots of voices with me, perhaps yours. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772. And what's going on right now is the Tent University and the General Strike Occupy Education happening up at UCSC and elsewhere around the state. I went up there quickly to drop off some flyers to the Occupy Santa Cruz folks and the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom people, and we'll be playing some of their, well, I barely had a chance to get a comment or two because the road was blocked. There was no place to park. You had to walk in to deal with the situation, which is as it may be or as it was, but it didn't provide much time for a man dashing to the studio. So I guess you're gonna hear what I got. Plus tonight we're gonna have Catherine Byers, the interview, which I did. Gosh, it was, I guess, a week ago now, last Friday. And that may be of interest to some. Catherine Byers, of course, is a council member, former mayor, and an observer inside the building at 75 River Street during the occupation. She, like others, myself included, wasn't aware that there was any kind of crime by being inside a building that seemed to be open with police allowing folks to come and go. And we'll hear what she has to say about that, although there are a lot of other topics that are ducked by Catherine Byers. And this kind of is a follow-up. The same day, actually, that I did the Byers interview, I also did the interview with the mayor and council member Don Lane, who's, I played that interview on Sunday, so you can catch these interviews archived in case you miss them. Unfortunately, it's sometimes a little hard to figure out where they are, but Lane's interview was last Sunday. If you go to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, you can, if you want to bother, listen to the words of the mayor and, of course, some of my pungent commentary, which I am proud to say is less intrusive than usual, so that's good. Let's hear a little musica, and then we'll get into the substance of things.
On the side of a hill, in a land called somewhere, a little boy lies asleep in the earth, while down in the valley a cruel war rages, and people forget what a child's life is worth. On the side of a hill, a little cloud weeps and waters the grave with its silent tears, while a soldier cleans and polishes a gun that ended a life at the age of 7. And the war rages on in a land called somewhere, and generals order their men to kill and to fight for a cause they've long ago forgotten, while a little cloud weeps on the side.
And that was a Paul Simon tune, and your tune to Free Radio Santa Cruz. That actually was an earlier show, which a prior talk show host put on, which does have an interview with former mayor, council member, and potential trespass conspiracy felon Catherine Byers. which is really kind of ludicrous, as is this entire prosecution of 11 of us, which we'll see how that kind of unfolds. If you want to, however, hear that particular interview, you're going to have to go to the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and look at it in an archive, because it's archived, but it ain't available at the moment, because I have new stuff I want to play, and this is it coming up. So you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3, or is it 103.1? No, it's 101.3. And it's also on a stream, which is much more, a little more difficult to reach than it used to be, because we are no longer linked to that stream as a Free Radio Santa Cruz. But if you are clever enough and cagey enough and wily enough, you can find the stream and swim with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Who knows, maybe one of our listeners will have found the stream, will call in. I actually found it a little hard to reach myself, but it's there. Anyway, it is Thursday, if you're listening to this live, and we are live now. What you'd previously been hearing was a rebroadcast. And you can call in if you'd like. The call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. We are still money grubbing for your money. And if you want to, it still says we're going to run out of money in March, according to this old Post-it note. I thought it might be a little better than that. It might be April, because we're in March all of a sudden, and we're still here, but apparently things are getting kind of slim budget-wise. So if you like the shows and you like the opportunity to hear people like myself rant on, you know, kick down, you can go to Free Radio, or actually freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org, and kick down money there. You can send a check to FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, 95061 in Santa Cruz. Again, FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, 95061. Simplest way is to go to the website, where you can also get that information, freakradio.org. So, the struggles continue. I'm going to be playing my usual blizzard of or sequence of street interviews and such in the next 2 hours. They'll be followed by Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. But there are other things happening as well. And a couple of those things I will be mentioning as we go ahead, and inviting you to check them out as actual events rather than simply sitting as a passive listener. You can actually get out there and hoist a sign and raise your voice and make your presence known to the officials that are allowing the continuing and aggravating the current situation. And that's, I think it's worth doing. It's hard to say. If I look up back on the years I've done that and the results I've gotten, I'm not terribly enthused. And I'm always open for new suggestions as to how to proceed. Until those new suggestions bear fruit, I mean, there's protests, there's phone calls, letters, there's boycotts, there's civil disobedience, there's direct action, and I suppose if you get into really militant direct action at a certain level, and you are being attacked, there's self-defense, armed self-defense, or unarmed self-defense. All these are roads, and the real issue is, are you doing anything? And that, of course, is something that only you know, and maybe you'll share those issues with us. So, let's begin with some interviews. Recent interviews, actually, and probably go back to a few earlier interviews as well. And also, of course, any phone calls about breaking or ongoing events which are happening, people should know about. I believe tonight there is a General Assembly going on, at the soon-to-be Forbidden Zone in front of the courthouse. That's the courthouse steps on Ocean Street. You can check out that General Assembly. There's a planned foreclosure march on Friday starting at, I think it's 1 o'clock at the same steps and going to the post office via a tour of the various criminal banks in town that have been ripping off everybody's money, property, and lives for quite a period of time, all, of course, quite legally. So you can't really call them criminals now, can you, after all the... We don't want to think of our august leaders and community leaders as criminals. That would be very confusing to do that. Anyway, while you're trying to struggle with this cognitive dissonance, decide who you can trust and whether it's worth anything to bring petitions to people who have shown for decades that they couldn't care less if homeless people are arrested, their property stolen, their health destroyed, their sleep interrupted, all that stuff, which I've been inveighing against for two decades. Whether going to them with another petition is a good idea, and I probably will at some point bring another petition around, or whether, you know, that and other actions that are more addressed to the broader community are really what's needed. Can't really say I'm the expert on the tactics. I'm not. I just know that the issues are important, and what they move you to do is, well, that's what lies in the future.
Well, here I am at the aftermath of the Occupy Santa Cruz Sunday shindig. It's about 20 to 4 on the Sunday of March 4th, 2012, and I'm talking with
Ed Fry.
And Ed, you've been attorney for how long?
43 years.
And you're currently still attorney for Occupy Santa Cruz's General Assembly, which is still attempting to assert the legality of public assembly in San Lorenzo Park.
Right.
Even though San Lorenzo Park's campground has long since been destroyed by the friendly Santa Cruz Police Department.
Yes, Mike. Makes right.
Indeed. Particularly when you got Mayor Ryan Coonerty or Mayor Don Lee.
Either one.
Or perhaps under both of them, City Manager Martine Brunel.
Especially City Manager.
So I know that I mentioned to you that I had gone into court last week with my bathrobe and my my teddy bear, Eduardo, the police bear, in order to make the point that, well, I always wear it, whenever I'm called to court on a homeless case, and I regard the 75 River Street indictment where we're all accused of occupying a building, which was done, you know, to provide shelter for homeless people in the winter in a community center and things of that sort, as I understand it. To dramatize to the community and also to satirize the fact that homeless people have no place to sleep at night, even though the city insists on making them criminals if they fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night. And I was banned from the courtroom. Well, I was told to go out of the courtroom and remove my bathrobe and leave that questionable teddy bear outside. And I found out from a public defender later that there is some court case recently that states it's not relevant, the clothing you wear, unless it's disruptive to the proceedings. You and your younger days in the 70s, what, up in Mendocino or something?
No, at this time I was actually working for a corporate firm representing Wells Fargo Bank, among other clients.
Ah, very interesting. We've got a mole here. Go ahead.
Right on. So, but I also joined what was called the Mission Switchboard, volunteers for community service, and I volunteered as a lawyer. So along comes...
what year was it?
This was 1971, 70, 71, somewhere in there. Along comes this African-American man, call him Johnson for lack of a better memory. He was telling me how his brother had just been convicted of raping a white woman in Brownsville, Texas. No, it was not in Brownsville, but nearby in Texas. And he now has a sentence for a crime he did not commit. Was determined to do what Jonathan Jackson had tried to do for his brother, George Jackson, at San Quentin. And he was going to go to Brownsville, the Brownsville prison in Texas, and liberate his brother. In order to do that, the first step was to get a vehicle. So he...
You volunteered your car.
No, he went into... he got himself a suit and tie, and he really looked spiffy. He went into a car dealership, in, I think it was Ford, in San Francisco, and took a test drive and just didn't stop. He headed south along Highway 101.
Extended test drive.
He was headed to Brownsville. So around about that time, the time that he got to Gilroy, he was pretty hungry, so he pulled into a McDonald's parking lot. And just then, he was seen as driving while black.
Oh, yeah, DWB.
DWB.
What's that nigger doing with that kind of a car?
That's right. So the cops, of course, called in.
The evil days of 1971 in the medieval state of California.
Right. So the cops called in, and they found that, yes, this was a stolen vehicle. So he saw the cops, meanwhile, so he takes off, and the cops take off after him, and they chase him all the way through town. They even put a blockade at the end of town because they know he's on his way. They had radioed ahead. So he took a detour, went up on the sidewalk, made a quick right turn, and then headed down toward the south end of town on an alternate route. As he was passing the police department of Gilroy, he reached out with his gun, and he shot back at the cops who were pursuing him. Well, they caught him about several blocks later, and they beat the hell out of him, and they put him, and he was put in jail, and the charges were attempted murder with a deadly weapon, assault with a deadly weapon on a peace officer. So he was facing, you know, life in prison. So he comes to me, and here I am, a corporate lawyer, like I say, representing Wells Fargo and other clients, and he asked me to represent him. He says, I don't want a public defender. I said, well, you know, I'm not even a criminal lawyer. He says, I don't care. I want you. You're a Wall Street type lawyer. You must be good.
Little did he know.
Yeah, right. So I said, well, okay, at least temporarily. So the first real court appearance, I decided, well, this man needs some radical help. So I thought I'd go in without a suit and tie. And so I wore my Levi's and my plaid shirt. And so the judge calls the case. It's Judge... retired appellate justice Primo. Steve Primo, his son, works for the Santa Cruz County Superior Court as a research attorney. And so Steve's he's a wonderful guy. But anyway, back to his father, who is the judge. He's sitting there and he calls the case, People versus Johnson. And my client and I both stand up. And the court says, Mr. Johnson, is that you? And he says, yes. He goes, well, where's your lawyer? I'm standing right next to him. I said, Your Honor, I'm his attorney. And the judge says, well, counsel, where's your suit? I said, Your Honor.
What are you wearing?
I'm wearing a plaid shirt and Levi's. And he says, I didn't wear a suit today. He says, well, I want you to go and get one. I said, I live in San Francisco. That's a long ways away. We were in court in San Jose. So I said, I live in San Francisco. That would take way too long to get my suit and come back. He says, well. And I said, besides, Your Honor, I've done a little bit of research on this beforehand, and there is no law that requires me to wear anything in particular to the courtroom, even as an attorney. And therefore, I decline. He said, I don't care what the law is, counsel. In this courtroom, I am the arbiter of what you're going to wear, and I say you're going to wear a suit and tie.
Go ahead.
So he says, in my courtroom, I'm the arbiter of what you're going to wear, and you're going to wear a suit and tie. So he says, Mr. Bailiff, take that tie off and give it to Mr. Fry. And then he says, and then you take him into my chambers and you give him my suit coat. Well, Judge Primo was 5'3" tall, and I'm 6'3". And so when I put his coat on, it comes up to my elbows and the sleeves. So I go back into court with the bailiff's tie and his coat, and we held our proceedings. And it was quite a laughable scene.
What kind of a hearing was it?
It was just it was arraignment.
That's it.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, I found a better lawyer, a real criminal lawyer, because I was a civil lawyer. He found Doran Weinberg to take over the case, which was good. Because
is he currently in prison?
At this point, you know, this is 40 years later. I don't have any idea where he is.
Just don't keep up with your clients, eh?
Yeah, but he did get a better deal than I think I could have gotten him.
We've been talking with
Ed Fry.
Thanks, Ed. Well, you were at the FTP, Fuck the Police rally in Oakland last night.
Yes, I was.
Before we get into that rally, which I think was last Saturday, which is simply a demonstration of anger and defiance and essentially asserting independence, our unwillingness to be cowed and bowed by the kinds of massive constitutional and human rights violations made against peaceful protesters in the Occupy Oakland attempt to set up a community center up there. And earlier, too, Occupy Oakland has suffered a number of police attacks, quite systematically almost, and it's you can actually research those by going to the Occupy Oakland website, if you'd like, which I haven't done recently, but I've seen them kind of piecemeal as they come up. The reason the issue with the dress and Ed Frye came up is because I've taken to wearing a bathrobe and teddy bear to court, as mentioned before, in order to dramatize the fact that, A, the whole prosecution is ludicrous and something of a cavalcade of nonsense, but also in a sort of more serious vein that there are people outside who do not get the right to sleep at night, who are houseless, who are homeless. And because they don't suffer all kinds of significant consequences with employment, health, and in other areas as well. And it also, I'd say, the county and the city suffer a kind of degradation and brutality through instructing their police force to enforce these kinds of laws and suggesting to citizens that they have the right to make complaints based upon their notion that they should be able to clear the area of poor people who have no place to go without providing any kind of meaningful accommodations for them, without recognizing whether there's any real health and safety hazard or real criminal problem happening. Just give them the exercise, the power, essentially, of the gun, the badge, and the court. And that I try to satirize by wearing a bathrobe, indicating, boy, I wish I could get some sleep around here, but it doesn't look like that's possible. So, and I've done this probably at least a dozen times in courts here and in other cities, and on occasion been instructed to remove my bathrobe, but generally not in Santa Cruz courts. Generally in Santa Cruz courts, there is understanding, as apparently is also, there's legal precedent for it, though I can't get Attorney Anthony Robinson to email me the cases that he said he was going to. Come on now, Anthony, get it together. Hopefully he will. He apparently has found some cases that show, unless you are actually disrupting a court, your dress is not relevant and cannot be imposed by the judge. I guess they can make you take off your hat or something. It's a little obscure to me. But in any case, that was the basis for that whole background. Let's hear a little bit about the FTP rally in Oakland.
This is Anthony.
What day is today?
Yeah, today is Sunday, yep. The 4th of March. Go ahead.
Well, last night in Oakland, at their strongest, they had about 100 people marching in the FTP march. And FTP stands for Fuck the Police.
Oh, yeah, got that up. Mr. Potty Mouth?
Fuck the Police.
Go ahead, Mr. Poopoo.
Anyhow, I got there just about the end of it. It was still pretty strong, still real loud, and I heard them across the lake at least, you know, so.
How many people were there?
About 100. About 100.
What kind of signs were they carrying?
Fuck the police and, you know.
Is this some sort of urging to engage in sexual congress, more intimacy, police department?
Yeah, something like that. Bestiality, you know, I mean, so.
You're talking about reject the police, perhaps,
yes.
Or curse
the police,
or fie on the police.
I say we need to stop regulating so much as of our government and start regulating more of our police force and our military force. And I bet you this
where did they march to? Where did the FTP people march to?
They marched around Lake Mary.
I see. And what did the OPD, the Oakland Police Department, do?
They followed them on motorcycles, but other than that, there was no arrest made, no
was
real arrest.
Any fucking happening?
Not that I saw.
There you go. Again, false advertising by the occupiers. I've heard it before.
Whatever, man. I got to get out of here, but you guys have a nice day.
Thank you. Our local police. I mean...
We're downtown on many voices here with the name of the group is
Tether Horse.
Tether Horse, yeah. And Tether has been here in front of New Leaf. It's about 4:30 or 4:40, and you're all packing up to go. We're talking guitar, banjo. What else we got here?
It's a cajon. It's a Peruvian gem.
And are you all male, or are there some women involved here? What's your name?
I'm Tina Pease.
You're the brains behind the outfit?
Yeah.
And you're the brawn. What's your name?
I'm Matt Cheney.
And Matt, who is this a consensus process? Do you do? How do you decide, make decisions? Who's the
dictator? Yeah, he's a complete dictatorship.
Your name is?
My name's J.J. McCabe.
And you have a banjo on your back.
No, mandolin and fiddle.
Mandolin and fiddle. And what's, there's another looking stringy instrument there on you, sir. What's your name?
My name's Chris.
You're eating carrots, I noticed.
Somebody paid us in carrots today. It was pretty awesome. They're organic, too, and they're really good.
I see. You're going to enter the cartoon business, perhaps, at some point.
Yeah.
What is the instrument on your back?
It's a bass, but it's a dobro, so I call it a bass bro.
Whoa.
We're very funny.
And you, yes, it's amusing. And you, sir, are?
My name's Evan.
And your position here is?
Typically, I play a drum set, but when we're on the street, I play a Peruvian drum called the cajon.
And have you, it means you got big cajones?
It does mean that.
Yeah. Very good. Whoa. So, this is a band of five, then?
Correct.
Yeah. And are you here every Sunday?
No, we not very often, actually. We come down here, but just every once in a while, I guess, when we need some extra money or just want to do it when the weather's nice. Yeah.
And any hassles from the police or the so-called hostilities? I mean, the hosts?
One time they came by because of somebody was complaining about the noise, and they actually said specifically that they didn't care about the music so much as they did the drums. They wanted me to stop playing, which they personally attacked me towards the police.
They're kind of the drum critic, percussion paranoia. So.
They couldn't handle the cajones, so to speak.
The cajones were too big for them.
Right.
So did you stop playing the drums?
We moved to a different spot.
I see. There's a guy up there in that office who is the terror of drummers on this corner.
It might have been the guy. It might have been the person, because we were right here. It was in the same spot.
Is she a part of your band?
Yeah, Harmony's Tina's daughter.
How old is this Harmony person? How old are you?
3 next week.
What do you play, Harmony? What kind of instrument does she play?
What instruments do you play, Harmony?
Harmony, you want to tell them what you play?
Say tambourine.
Tambourine, in case you didn't hear that, folks. So, good. Thank you, Harmony. Appreciate that. So, it's actually a band of 6. You are, again, shortchanging children.
Well, 5 and a half, you know. She doesn't always play with us. When she does, we get a lot of bigger crowd because she's adorable.
And more money.
Yeah.
So she's a draw. In other words, you're exploiting a 3-year-old.
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah. More money. You can quote us on that. We are 4 exploiting young people.
She enjoys it, though, so it's all right. She loves it.
She earned a carrot today. So
did she get her carrot? I see her hogging the carrot.
She got her carrot. She already got her carrot. So she worked for it. She got it.
Fair enough.
She clearly enjoyed it about as much as you would expect a 3-year-old to enjoy a carrot that wasn't covered in chocolate.
Well, my dad's holding it now.
Well, the crowd seemed to be enjoying your music. How long have you did you play for today?
About an hour?
Yeah, 40 minutes.
40 minutes, probably.
And where is your next appearance?
What's that? What's the next?
When will you show up again?
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe next weekend if it's nice.
Yeah, we just recorded an album, so we've been trying to keep it light.
And this is the album here in the...
That's our first album.
House It Took Me.
That's our first album. We came out with a new... We're coming out with a new one very soon.
That's actually why we're trying to make money, is we're trying to save up money to put out the next album, which we've already recorded. We just need to
have money to release it.
Yeah.
Okay. And how can people... Are you have a website people can go to?
If you go to facebook.com/tetherhorse, all one word, that'll get you to Facebook.
Facebook.com. Thank you.
Keep them at bay.
Thank you.
Keep the sword up.
This is our great job. I'm afraid of them, too. I'm under indictment in the courts. So, again, we've been talking with...
Tether Horse.
Tether Horse, yeah.
Tether Horse.
Tether Horse!
Tether Horse?
Tether Horse. And looks like the youngest member of Tether Horse has disappeared with a carrot. Nope, she's coming back. Thank you very much, and I'll have to maybe confiscate one of these in order to play it on the radio.
All right.
And switch to slow speed.
And you are still tuned to 101.3 FM, and you're also listening to a secret stream on Freak Radio, which, if I reveal to you, I'll probably have to be killed, but perhaps one of the listeners can let us know. You can also get this show later. It's archived at huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F, Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. The name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I talked about the bathrobe earlier. And we're going to be going for about an hour and a half. We're listening to some street interviews, which I do a lot of on the show, or try to. I want to... Well, perhaps it's going to be coming up in one of these interviews, and I don't need to give an extensive discussion or description. But I don't know. Let me see here. Having a little technical switcheroo here. Let's see if we have...
So we're entering the farmer's...
Yeah, there seems to be a problem with the tape at this point. I'm not sure exactly what that problem is. Occasionally these ancient technologies, often reliable, break down. I had played an interview, I think it was last show. I'm pretty sure it was last show, actually. It might have been the show before, but I think it was last show. With a petitioner, that is a fellow who circulates voter initiative petitions. You see them on Pacific Avenue. You used to see them outside Trader Joe's until they banned them as part of their decision that the First Amendment is one of those time-consuming and unnecessary amendments that don't apply to the parking lot in the back of Trader Joe's, which abuts a number of businesses and where a number of people, to some extent, gather. Though there is no formal plaza area, I admit, I guess that's one of their pretexts for not following the famous Pruneyard decision, which requires shopping centers, even though they're private property, to allow for public assembly if they are open to the public and allow some kind of accommodation for people who are giving out flyers, gathering petitions, signatures for petitions, and engaging in First Amendment-type activities. In any case, Quentin Cornish, also known as Robbie, is a guy I've known for years who has been occasionally gotten into, well, he's been challenged for his presence in various places, and he, instead of meekly going away, he says, no, wait a minute, I have a right to be here, and that sometimes provokes, on one occasion up in Felton, by his report, it provoked a police officer to draw his gun. On another occasion, it provoked other kinds of repressive responses. And apparently, according to his account, which we played last Sunday, I played it, that is, the farmers market management and one of the farmers and the police department evicted him from the farmers market for life, as he described it. So I went back to the farmers market to try to get some kind of second information, secondary source, to do a kind of double checking on this. And I did some interviewing. I didn't record the principals who evicted him, but I did talk to them at length. A fellow named Andy, who he originally had his difficulty with, who was with Windmill Foods, nice guys. You know, Quentin Cornish, Robbie is a nice guy too. They're all nice guys, and it's amazing how that, you know, the kind of problems we have in our society come up between nice people. It can happen. And the they gave me a different account of what went down. And for those of you who listened last Sunday to Quentin Cornish's account, and I referred Quentin to legal activist Steve Plaich to get some legal advice and assistance, because it's a particularly sensitive issue to me when the farmers market starts telling people they can't be there, particularly people with petitions, because I had a petition and was distributing flyers 11 years ago there in 2001 about the preservation of the drum circle. And the head of the farmer's market, a woman named Janet Blazer, tried to throw me out and had me arrested twice. My crime was petitioning in the farmer's market, or I guess she called it trespass. But since the area was obviously open to the public and since it was a meeting area, they didn't have any right to do that. And she was eventually, either she was dismissed by the board of the farmer's market or she decided to move on. I'm not sure what actually happened, but all charges against me were dropped, though Sergeant Butchie Baker did take some delight in arresting me twice, handcuffing me, taking me to the police station, and so forth. So I'm sensitive to that kind of thing personally, and I also feel as a matter of principle that it's really important that there continue to be really strong toleration and respect for petitioners. Now, the claims of Nesh, the manager of the farmers market, and Andy, as I said, both of whom are quite congenial and seemed to be quite candid and gave me time, talked to me at length, they didn't seem to want to be recorded, or perhaps I didn't push hard enough for that. I was really more eager to hear their story than to put it on tape at the moment that I listened to it. But their claim was that Quentin was obnoxious, abusive, overly aggressive, that he refused to leave an area that was the farmer's, in this case, Andy of Windmill Foods, I guess it is. I may have the name wrong. His truck and stall area. And that there was a, he seemed eager to be, to dispute the issue, that to prove that he was right, whereas Andy just wanted to get back to selling vegetables, because that's why he was there. And Nesh said that later when he came, got involved, that the petitioner, Robbie, or also known as Cornish, simply wanted to argue with him and became angry, and at some point he was called a dick, and the language had persuaded Nesh to call the police and have him removed. But the upshot of it was that the thing that pleased me about these conversations, regardless of who was actually right, what the actual circumstances of this eviction were, was that both of them agreed that they would not stop him from coming back and petitioning again. And I guess they added the proviso that provided he not call them nasty names and interfere with their ability to, well, it's a question. There is a dispute as to what actually happened. From the point of view of the petitioner, he was rudely directed to leave the area when he felt that it was a public area. From the point of the farmer, apparently one of the people who had signed his petition, signed the petition by putting the petition on the board of the flatbed of the truck, and that kind of upset Andy, because it was his truck and he didn't really want that to happen, although, you know, we can all be a little too sensitive perhaps about our vehicles and so forth. I know a lot of people are, even though they park these behemoths that destroy the atmosphere and, you know, ruined the economy and have caused the entire country to be crisscrossed with steel and with concrete death zones. And I drive one of these myself, as most of you listeners may know or may not know. I don't know. Still, I guess it's as long as there is a determination that this man will be allowed back to petition, and I left him a message that he will be allowed back. I haven't heard back from him, and if and when I do, and he has further discussion of this matter, I'll be happy to bring it up here on the air. I think it's really important because there are definitely private entities in town who are taking over public spaces all over Pacific Avenue. You can see this happening. The Downtown Association wants to create a downtown business district, which will hire even more security police if they follow the example of New York City, to completely drive away even the appearance of poor people downtown. It's already a situation where you have so-called hospitality, or actually hostilipitality people, harassing street performers, poor people, political tablers, who are doing nothing other than, for example, sitting next to a vacant building, as though that's some kind of a crime. Now, you might say, well, it is a crime in Santa Cruz. There's a law, you see. It's on the books. It was passed by the city council. Yeah, I mean, they're just enforcing a law. Oh, come on, go to the city council. Don't blame us. Well, no, I blame anybody who is engaged in enforcing abusive laws against poor people that are designed to abrogate their rights. I really do. And I think the rest of the community should do the same. And that's why I raise my voice when it happens. I try to gather a crowd. I try to make those who are doing this kind of repression aware of the opinions of the community. Now, some people support this. They say, right on, you police department, run those homeless people out. You know, get rid of them activists. You know, I don't know, charge them with felonies and send them to prison, you know, that sort of thing, which is what they're doing with the Santa Cruz 11, and highly trumped up charges, which I've discussed at other times and which you can read about by going to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which you'll no doubt hear more about from me. But let's hear some more interviewing from the streets. In fact, why don't we go from the streets to the courts? Here's some more of the court scene. I think we were talking, it's either Monday or Tuesday, and I think it's more than, it's the end of February that these events happened. A lot of, or am I thinking of the beginning of, it could have been the beginning of last week. It might have actually been, I think it might have been, it was either Monday or Wednesday. I'm getting confused because there are so many court dates. I went to court, I think, 4 out of 5 days last week, or there were court dates 4 out of 5 days last week involving Santa Cruz, actually 5 out of 5 days of the week before. So I think this was a week and a half ago. These are conversations in the corridor outside Department 7, which is where all these cases are being held. Again, for those who don't know, these are charges of felony vandalism, felony conspiracy to vandalize, and 2 misdemeanor cases. What actually happened was a group of people occupied a vacant bank, 3.5 years vacant, across the street from Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo, I think, had the lease on this vacant bank across the street, and either had kept it vacant or had been insufficiently active in finding somebody to rent it at a $28,000 a month lease cost, as I understand. I haven't read the documents myself, but that's what I've been told. And there was winter was coming on. Occupy Santa Cruz had a campground across the river in the San Lorenzo Park that was being hard-pressed by the city to vacate. Oh, everybody was not being told where to vacate. They were just told to leave, get out of here, go away, disappear. And for some homeless people, this is a survival issue. And as everyone knows who knows, there's a homeless death toll every year that's significantly greater than in the community at large. And the average rate of death for homeless people is like 20 years younger. There was probably some thought, although, again, since I wasn't in on the planning and I wasn't a conspirator in putting this action together, there was some talk, I believe, about turning this building over to a place for people to stay. Part of the talk was about a community center. So there was an objective to also to simply dramatize to the community that there's a very wealthy, very corrupt, very privileged bank, one of the 5 largest banks in the country, Wells Fargo, which has gotten billions of dollars from the federal government in bailout money. I think it's billions. And essentially has been bailed out at the cost of all the rest of us, and who is now thriving very well and is keeping lots of vacant property, or at least has a significant vacant property in Santa Cruz downtown. That is not helping the economy of the city, and it certainly is not helping poor people. And to show that what could or should be done with it in terms of an occupation. And several hundred people in the course of the next 3 or 4 days, or I guess it was Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, so it was 3 days, came in and out of this place. I guess they had meals there. They held assemblies there. They met with city council members and reporters. I was one of them they met with. At one point, they barricaded themselves into the building when the police came. And there was some vandalism done. I guess some of the furniture was broken. And there was some graffiti, although reports I hear from people who were in the bank and were there for longer periods of time where there was very little, and there was a policy of no vandalism. Not everybody could be that well controlled, apparently. But the purpose of it was to dramatize the fact that there is no shelter for poor people, that money is being wasted, that Wells Fargo is one of the criminal banksters involved here, and that they need to be challenged in a more direct way than simply, I don't know, writing letters to the newspaper. And that people can take direct action to reclaim space and reclaim unused property. And a lot of people in the community took this as an assault on private property in some sort of principled way, that it was that people were next going to come and occupy their homes and, you know, and occupy their backyards. And I really doubt that. I've never talked to an occupier who has suggested people go occupy even the backyards of wealthy people, which there's some people who talk about sleeping on the mayor's lawn. There's a classic song by Phil Free, which discusses this, sings about this. Phil's part of a band in Santa Cruz, Just Kidding. And it is true that powerful politicians whose decisions result in homeless deaths and misery, I think, need to be held to account. And one of the ways to do this is sleeping on their lawn, I suppose. But, I mean, the idea that everybody's property is in jeopardy because a vacant, blighted bank property, it wasn't really. It was being, I mean, it wasn't, the windows weren't broken and it wasn't, you know, going to seed. But it was unused for 3.5 years, and it was essentially, you know, like the Rittenhouse building or like the Borders building. It's a big empty space downtown, which, you know, in a different kind of society would be put to use. It isn't being put to use. And so this was the purpose, as I understand it, of this occupation. A lot of people had a lot of doubts about it. I did too, you know, watching it unfold. It was done, looked like it was done with a lot of spontaneity. People didn't really sometimes know what they were doing. I mean, I don't know, you know, again, because I wasn't there much of the time. I mean, I went into the bank several times to do interviews with people, to observe a general assembly and so forth, and to hear what public officials who were there had to say, because they went into the bank too, and there were police around. They didn't stop people from going into the bank, though they could have said, you can't go in there, there's a no trespassing area. That wasn't done. And yet, of the hundreds of people who came and went from this bank, only 11 were criminalized and now face years in prison for felonies, two felonies each. Felony conspiracy to vandalize and felony vandalism. And they aren't even claiming that we did any vandalizing, the 11 of us who are involved. They claim that we are responsible for the vandalism of 100 other people. It's the kind of the nature of conspiracy law, or somebody in that group of 100 other people who graffitied the walls of the bank in some of the rooms, as is claimed. So this is the issue that brought us to court and brought us to the hallways of the court, and is actually costing several hundred thousand dollars of the taxpayers' money to go after folks. And, of course, even more important than the money that's being spent, although some activists are saying, yeah, focus on the money. Don't talk about the civil rights. People don't care about civil rights. They care about the money. And I think both are important issues. I think it's important that those who want to raise the issue of the incredible corruption in our society, the diversion of money into war and corporate profit and the 1%, are then turned into the criminals ourselves for doing this, particularly if we are the ones who are writing about it and speaking about it, or high-profile activists who are involved in bringing the issue to public attention through different means. That is, it's very dangerous when the community allows the police to do this. And it's depressing to watch this kind of thing unfold based on the mythology that somehow we're a bunch of horrible vandals who came in and, you know, created a lot of trouble and are attacking private property and want to occupy your bathroom and that sort of thing. It's nonsense. And there's a kind of mythology that I guess is easily spread in these hard times. I mean, you saw President Bush, or war criminal Bush, if you will, and his Democratic buddies successfully. They sold this Brooklyn Bridge to people that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and that it was some kind of a menace. And they're selling the same thing under President Obama, who's bombed more people than Bush as far as targeted assassinations with drones go, into a war with Iran. That's coming right down the pike. And I don't know why
the country doesn't learn. It's just it's amazing. I guess people maybe people are learning and they just can't speak out. Maybe, you know, there's something, there's a lot under the surface. I'm hoping that that's the case, because we certainly saw that last fall, this wholly unexpected, first the Arab Spring last year, and then in the fall when the Occupy movement spread like wildfire to different cities. It was really quite inspiring. And so maybe there is still that kind of passionate refusal to buy the nonsense and determination to stand up for what is really fair and just in our society, and or could be. Anyway, we were in court. We were waiting for Judge Ariadne Simons, who has shown a real predilection for discrimination against at least one activist, Becky Johnson, who I observed her denying again and again. She needs an attorney. Every attorney that a public defender is being appointed for her, but every time that happens, the public defender's office or the alternate public defender can't do it for one reason or another. And one attorney comes forward and is willing to do it. Jonathan Gettleman. He keeps being told, "Nope, we can't. We won't allow you." And there's no explanation. Don't even. It's this kind of arrogant martinet behavior. It's kind of inexplicable to me in a way, except as a way of saying, see, I'm more powerful than you. You have to do what I say. And we will do what we want to do, and we will not help you in the most obvious, and actually help ourselves, because every time the court stalls with this, it stalls the court calendar and so forth. Anyway, here's some stuff from the hallways, less of me, more of other folks, although you'll hear me interviewing. And if you have any thoughts, give a call, 427-3772, 427-3772, and like that.
Steve Plates, you're here in court today. You're actually wasting your time waiting in the corridors of the courtroom. Why are you here in this particular event?
I am in support of my comrades in 75 River Street. They're prosecuted for their alleged participation in the action over at the Coast Commercial Bank building. So we're all here in support of and solidarity with them.
Isn't it the Wells Fargo Bank building? Do you mean the prior Coast Commercial Bank building? That's 75 River Street.
Wells Fargo acquired Coast Commercial Bank in a merger. So then they acquired the lease, but I think the lease is administered by a company that's kind of a shell for Wells Fargo. And there are also, there's Jonathan Gettleman, by the way. Maybe you can interview him.
Attorney at law.
Yeah. But
I'm just in the people's point of view. You're not considering running for city council again, I hear.
Yes, I am. Matter of fact, I'm throwing my hat in the ring. You heard it here first.
Throw your head in the ring? Is that the idea?
Absolutely. Throwing my hat in the ring. Once more into the breach, my friends. Once more into the breach.
Whose breaches will you be in?
Now.
We've been talking with
Steve Plates.
Thank you. Thank you,
Steve.
So it's now about 9 o'clock, and Bob Lee has come out. He's the district attorney. And told us that it'll be another half hour before the court clears. One of the defendants is, of course, the notorious Becky Johnson, who has finally arrived at court 45 minutes late. Becky, how's it going?
Yes, I'm parking challenged, but thankfully, Judge Ariadne Simons graciously extended the time for my hearing, giving me an extra half hour.
She was too incompetent to handle the last hour's load in the appropriate amount of time, well, that's not really fair to say. I don't know how she handled it. My apologies.
Always your negative spin, Robert.
Well, not always, but frequently I take the other point of view, you know. So what are you here for today, BJ?
Well, I'm here for a preliminary setting hearing where the different attorneys, my defense attorney, the prosecutors, all decide that they'll have their documents and everything together for my preliminary hearing on Monday. However, I'm not anticipating any of this to go forward.
Can you try to keep your voices down a little bit? We got two departments over here that are still in session. The judge can just hear you guys a lot outside here. And
Oh, that's too bad. The judge can hear us outside.
So the deputy is asking us to pipe down in a courteous manner, I might add. Go ahead, Becky.
Yes, it's hard to keep these mobs unruly.
as I say, so.
Fry, your attorney has arrived.
Hi, Ed. Good morning.
Still unbowed in spite of the many storms that shake your frame, your manly frame.
I don't believe in bowing, especially not to courts.
Well, you haven't got your bathrobe with you, I see. So.
Yeah, you...
Are you going to disrobe before going into court?
I'm afraid I may have to because I want to first bring the court decision that was offered me by a public defender that says that it is not inappropriate to wear whatever you want into court, provided it isn't disruptive. I doubt that will be respected in these courts, but who knows?
Who knows? So don't you have something more radical underneath with you if she makes you take it off again?
That's a good idea. I should have a large phallus or something. You know?
I thought underwear that says I heart Ariadne Simons on the crotch would be the most appropriate.
I think these sexual references are inapropos because, after all, Ariadne and I are just colleagues, you might say, beyond the bench. So what brings you, Ed, to this neck of the woods? I know sometimes you're a defendant, sometimes you're a plaintiff, sometimes you're a defending attorney. I mean, what are you doing this time?
Here I'm defending against another fake prosecution.
And what prosecution is that?
Against Becky Johnson,
and
who had nothing to do whatsoever with 75 River Street.
Except blogging about it.
Except blogging, which, yeah, she dared to speak.
Excessively.
She dared to express herself on the subject.
Are you familiar with conspiracy law, which states that if you are, in fact, part of an agreement to engage in any kind of illegal behavior, that the consequences and fruits of that behavior must be something you are held accountable and liable for. In fact, you don't even have to do any vandalism yourself. You can simply be, in fact, judged guilty not only of conspiracy to vandalize, but felony vandalism if somebody else does it.
You seem to be implying that Becky Johnson was part of some conspiracy.
I have no knowledge of that fact, but I'm wondering if this questionable individual is prepared to go to Sing Sing. Becky?
It should be said, interrupting, that I make a lot of dry comments which are intended to be seen as actually absurd comments for those who are just tuning in. And I'm hoping that comes across. Sometimes it doesn't, and people think I'm actually serious. But no, I'm actually trying to satirize and send up this whole nonsense, although it's very serious for these 11 people and for many, many other people who are being chilled by this whole prosecution.
Well, I think for that to be true, they would have to have some evidence of me conspiring before the event occurred. And in the 133 pages of documentation provided by DA Rebecca Young,
overseen by Bob Lee.
Signed under penalty of perjury by D.A. Bob Lee, yes. There's not a shred of evidence of anything other than perhaps the poor vision of a certain police officer.
You don't mean Officer Winston, by any chance?
I'll
defer to your attorney on that matter.
Defer to my attorney.
That's how the rumor goes. Now, talking with... let's go over here so it's a little quieter. So again, we're talking with...
Charlie Stevens.
And Charlie, you're a longtime public defender.
I haven't been a public defender for a while, but that's all right.
But you've defended many people.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you, of course, are very familiar with Santa Cruz Courts.
Yes.
Perhaps too familiar.
I don't know about that.
All right. And your thoughts, I'd ask you this question, which is the nature of required decorum. I actually went to the county, the clerk's office, the Superior Court clerk's office, to say, are there any written rules regarding decorum, proper dress? And she told me no. Are there any rules that specify that a judge has the power to, you know, engage in dress restrictions? And she said, no, but that's what they do. What's your understanding?
Is per the rules of California court, they are able to do, well, I'll say what I know there. They can enforce no hats. They can enforce things like no chewing gum.
All of which are posted on the door.
Exactly. But
no bathrobes has not been posted. I'm wearing a bathrobe.
And
teddy bears has not been posted.
I don't know their restrictions on what they can say beyond that, because, for instance,
My assumption is if someone walked in bare naked, they could have a problem with that. But then again, maybe not. Maybe that would be a First Amendment issue.
Particularly in Santa Cruz. Maybe bare-breasted might be a little bit less daring.
Maybe so, yeah. Breastfeeding in the courtroom, for instance, might be a...
Has that been an issue in any courtroom?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm just, you know, Robert, you asked me, and these are the... Where did I go?
Off the cuff. You didn't have any preparation for
this. But what I would say is this, is I don't, in my opinion, though I'm not aware of any legal precedent one way or the other, wearing a bathrobe such as yours with the teddy bear and the pins is perfectly okay.
And indeed, no other judge, with one exception 22 years ago, has ever told me I had to take off the bathrobe and leave it outside or couldn't wear it or be in contempt of court. I did get challenged for wearing a fuck judges without justice button at one point, although that case actually was questionable because they didn't, it was not, and I explained to the judge, it was not about, actually it was specifically a protest about a decision she had made regarding a particular individual, but it wasn't, you know, disruptive. It was just a matter of First Amendment activity, and it went. Anyway, so your thoughts are that if one were to pursue this, I guess what? If one were to go into court again within the situation, what would you advise the bathrobee to do?
What I would, if it was my client, Robert,
yes, you would.
I tell him to ditch the bathrobe.
Ditch the damn bathrobe.
That's what I would advise them to do. Right. But if they wanted to push the issue, then we'd work on pushing the issue. But as I said,
that's the kind of lawyer you are.
That's exactly. If the ultimate goal is to take care of the underlying felony charges, then I would tell them to ditch the bathrobe. If the goal was to create publicity and create side issues, then they can work on the bathrobe. But yeah, I think that the bathrobe issue, right or wrong, could distract from what the bigger issues are.
And that's certainly a consideration that has to be taken into account. any comments at all on the 75 River Street felony cases, of which there are 11 people charged with, one of whom is losing his voice as we speak?
You know, Robert, what I know about that is I can't comment based on
my... Are you taking any of the cases?
I haven't not reviewed any of the reports. I have not spoken to anyone. I mean, I'm speaking to you right now. But I haven't spoken to any of the defendants charged about their specific issues. So all I really know is what is portrayed in the public, you know, as to what's going on.
Well, Sentinel always gives an accurate account.
I was just about to say is that I don't trust what I hear to be beyond rumors and allegations. And, you know, whether there were crimes committed, I don't know. And if you look at the bigger picture, the social justice of it, I definitely think that money could be better spent in other areas.
How much does a felony trial cost the courts? Any idea?
It depends.
I mean, ranging, if it goes all the way to trial, let's say.
It could easily reach hundreds of thousands of dollars if you include all the court costs and personnel costs.
For one individual or for 11 individuals?
I'm thinking of a situation like yours with 11 individuals. The cost could go on and on because of the length of the proceedings for that many defendants.
Now, have you been involved in felony cases yourself?
Hundreds.
And what about felony conspiracy cases?
Given that I handle a lot of gang cases, they are often prosecuted under conspiracy theories. So, but nothing in regards to a protest vandalism type situation like you're talking about.
The question I guess would have for you is the nature of the felony law. We were told by at least one attorney, not my attorney, just a sort of secondary thought, is that individuals charged don't have to actually have committed any vandalism. They don't, but they can still be charged with felony vandalism and felony conspiracy if they talked about organizing an event that ultimately led to vandalism.
That is correct. I mean, there's more details to it than that, but that is the general idea. In a conspiracy theory, take it away from the vandalism and take it into situations that I deal with. If the conspiracy is five guys sitting around talking about how to shoot a rival gang member, and three of those guys then go and shoot the rival gang member, all five can be held responsible in the conspiracy theory. And that those are the situations I'm familiar with dealing with.
What if they talk about engage in some misdemeanor, and in the course of that misdemeanor, other people commit a crime that weren't part of the original group?
And it's magic legal words called, was it the natural and foreseeable consequences of the initial actions there. In other words, was this something that was foreseeably coming out of the proposed misdemeanor conduct?
Interesting. And chilling as well to hear.
It is. And that's, like I said, I've never dealt with that in regards to what happened over here in River Street, but I have dealt with it. Once again, it's in
more serious matters.
Unfortunately, it's gang crimes is where a lot of this stuff comes up, because that's where conspiracies are usually pursued, you know, and where felony conspiracy law, quite frankly, is what's designed for us in those situations.
What about the conspiracy to bomb Afghanistan? And I guess we don't want to get into that. Well, anything else come up locally that you think people should know about in terms of... there's a protest coming up tomorrow against the National Defense Authorization Act, which, as you may know, actually codifies the right of the president and his cronies, or whoever's advising him, to certify that individuals can be held without trial or a writ of habeas corpus.
Yes, no, I am familiar with that.
Could you be next on their list?
I would certainly hope not.
I hope you haven't got any Korans lying around.
I don't like the idea of blind justice in those situations. And, I wasn't aware of the protest tomorrow, but...
I'll give you a flyer. I think I gave you a flyer.
You gave me a flyer, and I hadn't had a chance to read it yet. I've still been around here.
Appreciate your, willing to be outspoken, or at least speaking out on these matters. And again, we've been talking with...
Charlie Stevens.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right, rough life.
So, Charlie, you're also... You've done a lot of representing of a conspiracy around gang situations, and I've been concerned that I've never really had an individual who's a gang member coming in and telling his perspective on the prosecutions, stay-away orders, things of that, injunctions. You just said a moment ago that most gang members prosecuted around here, I don't know if you didn't say this, I was wondering if most are of Hispanic nature.
Almost exclusively.
And that the grants by the government don't apply even to white gang members, but only to Hispanic gang members.
The grants that this county utilizes have only been for Hispanic gangs, as far as reimbursement for the prosecution and conviction of the young Hispanic youth, basically.
And is it fair, though, to say that most of the prosecutions are of, well, perhaps because they're being funded that way, but gang crimes, in your experience, what percentage of the gang crimes in the Santa Cruz County are done by people of gangs of Hispanic origin, gangs or of Chinese origin, French origin, white supremacist origin, Jewish origin? Heard about them Jewish gangs.
Well, what I've
heard talked about that.
If you look at the statistics of what's actually prosecuted conviction and convicted, it's almost exclusively Hispanics. As to what I suspect is actually going on, and if we're use the broad definitions of gangs, it certainly would include white power groups, some West Side groups that are not Hispanic,
Are they prosecuted?
They are not.
And are they not prosecuted because there's no funding to prosecute them, or no will, or both?
I can't speak as to the no funding, but I think it's not as popular. I think that's for a variety of reasons, I think it comes down to.
So, you're suggesting, again, the question I had to you is the percentage of crime done by Hispanic gang members compared with the percentage of prosecutions against Hispanic gang members.
Well, what I would say is I think there is more crime out there that is not prosecuted that is probably done by gang-like situations, but the people aren't Hispanic, so it's treated differently. Unfortunately, though, there is a reality that there is a large percentage of the violent crime committed in this county is attributable to Hispanic gangs. And I wish that wasn't true.
There are more Hispanic gangs or more Hispanics, or...
I think it actually probably goes into the socioeconomic conditions of the South County and parts of Mid County, and the suppression of that class of our citizens. Out of desperate situations come desperate actions.
What percentage of the county is Hispanic, in your understanding?
I don't know those stats.
I
would guess that it's got to be close to half, if not more, and certainly more in the south part of the county. But I'm not going off of any census numbers I know. This is just my observations.
I don't know.
some folks are interested in the costs of a felony trial for a public defender or an alternate defender. You were suggesting already that the cost to the county, maybe the DA, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars for the 11 cases. If every one of these individuals had to hire their own attorney, what would attorneys be likely to charge to take things through trial?
It varies attorney to attorney, but it would be in the thousands, potentially tens of thousands of dollars for competent counsel, depending on how they work their fee structure.
And I know we've talked about one attorney that you know suggested $4,500 to $6,500 for the whole course of this trial.
That is correct. I suspect that would be lower than many people would ask for, but that's an estimate I would have.
I may know someone who may be contacting that attorney. I can find him. Anyway, we've been talking again with
Charlie Stevens.
Hey, thank you, Charlie. And you've also brought up a point, Charlie, that we had a an hour and a half delay, it looks like. An hour delay. An hour and 15-minute delay here with about 60 or 70 people in the hallway. What would you say?
That's probably about right. And some of them are probably out in the atrium grabbing a cup of coffee and that sort of thing as well.
So that also involves costs, and many of them I see at least three to four defendants. Well, and some people, I'm a defendant, are here just to be supportive of the other defendants. Some are buckling up their buckles, having gone out into the world and to face the sheriff's. We won't let you in unless you disrobe completely with all your metal. Thank you again, Charlie.
No problem, Rob.
So I'm here in front of, it's actually would be the farmer's market if it were a Wednesday, but it's around one beautiful sunny day, and I'm talking with Hugo. And Hugo, you've been doing some petitioning for a cause that I don't agree with, but you feel strongly about, having to do with right to life, 40 days for life. And I've been concerned that the city has taken away your right, and that of others, to stand under a tree over there with a placard alerting the public to an issue you feel is of great importance.
Well, a little more complicated than that. The city, there's been attempts on the part of the city to allow us, but we've been harassed by Planned Parenthood, who has made it hard for us.
How have they been harassing?
Well, they call the police if we walk down that way with the signs. The police start to
comply. According to our Planned Parenthood, and they require you to keep a certain distance away. Or?
Well, no, the police have been pretty. Some, there's some in the police department that have said they understand this. So, and there's been a tolerance of free speech to a certain extent, but the point is, it's very difficult to express that right.
Planned Parenthood called the cops because they thought you were too close to the Planned Parenthood Center, and then the city told you you had to be on the sidewalk?
The agreement with that...
To clarify what's going on here, there's a large parking lot in back of Planned Parenthood and Logos at the corner of Cedar and Cathcart. It was actually previously used on Wednesday by the Drum Circle and has since been sort of overrun by commercial businesses doing a brisk business on Wednesday at the farmer's market, sort of taking over the farmer's market space. This is a parking lot that's used. It's now a paid parking lot. You have to go in there and can't park free. You used to be able to do that for 3 hours. Now you get to pay. But the point I've always been concerned about is what I've called the parking lot panic law, which is the law passed by former mayor and current council member Ryan Coonerty, actually by the whole city council, but proposed by him, great civil libertarian and constitutional lawyer that he is. It makes it illegal to sit in a car and read a book or to do anything but to park and retrieve your vehicle or walk directly through the parking lot. And that kind of criminalization of people, of course, is obviously something that is not enforced unless the police have some other reason that they want to go after you. But, of course, it allows for massive selective enforcement. And in the case of
the Right to Life people, whose cause I don't agree with, but whose right to petition I strongly agree with, it has been used to eliminate them from the parking lot. There was a point at which, about a year and a half ago, I tried to document the fact that both they and the people at Planned Parenthood were kind of assisting women coming to get either abortions or abortion counseling. And there was a kind of a difference of opinion on that whole issue, as everyone knows who's been following any of this issue. But both of them were, of course, illegal under the Coonerty law, under the city's law, which, of course, is ridiculous and a violation of the First Amendment, and also completely unnecessary, except that it's a sort of a catering to the police department's determination that it wants to be able to arrest anyone, anywhere, at any time, for anything. I mean, after you're innocent, what have you got to fear, right? You know, I mean, that's the theory, I guess. And at least to stop and question a person or to exclude them from an area or to search them or to do an ID check on them and so forth. Let us see your papers. And those people have become increasingly subservient to this notion, which I resist myself as much as I can practically, as well as speak out against it. So when I go through these metal detectors at the courthouse, though, I try to be not just courteous, but friendly to the sheriffs. I also make it clear I think they're acting ridiculously and unconstitutionally and holding up everybody and subjecting them to intrusive, unnecessary searches. I guess I should probably poll people as they come through. How many people think it's necessary to have everybody searched in this fashion? Please raise your hands. Because I'm really curious to know whether we have in fact degenerated to the point where we have a community of people that actually believes in this fantasy of the terrorist threat, which has been used to murder people abroad by the hundreds of thousands in the last decade. If you want to look at Iraq and the millions of refugees created there, it's amazing to me. Anyway, back to this rather poorly recorded interview with Hugo of the Right to Life movement. He was sort of alone with his sign on the sidewalk in this huge parking lot which he was not allowed to be in, although I think occasionally he did wander into it and wander out of it. You're allowed to be there if you're parking or retrieving your vehicle for 15 minutes or walking through. But, arguably what he was doing, walking into it and out of it without a vehicle being parked there, perhaps he had a vehicle which I wasn't aware of, made him liable to a fine of anywhere between $300 and $500. I'm not quite sure how much it was, but it's huge, and it's, it speaks for itself.
The 40 days had with the police department was an agreement that tried to accommodate the right of passerbys and the right to use the parking lot. And
I never saw you or any of your group blocking passerbys or anybody else.
No, we're not primarily a protest. They call us protesters out here. A lot of us are Catholics.
You have your rosary with you.
Yeah, and a lot of the people that come in here and get abortions are Hispanics, low-income people, basically, blacks, Orientals. There is a certain amount of suppression going on here of that group, including us, who are Catholics, and others who join us in the pro-life, basically. We're pro-life, primarily, not primarily a protest. We're not protesting. We're not a conflict at that level. We're not at that level. Notice on the other side of the sign,
pray to end abortion. Right. So you're looking for prayer rather than protest.
Beyond is a higher source and higher account for our activities and also their activity, the activity that takes place there for everybody. And so this is where we're at, even though they label us. And that kind of an attempt, you don't have to come on.
You're getting information. You have a sign. You're not on the sidewalk praying. You're on the sidewalk advising people of your concerns, which you're suggesting people express through prayer, for one thing. And you were doing that in the parking lot. Should they have told you had to come to the sidewalk?
You know, it's hard to interpret their view of the free access. and because you're dealing in a public situation. And so
you were denying anybody else access?
No, we were.
You may have been trying to persuade people not to get abortions, but that, you know, that certainly didn't constitute stopping them from it.
Basically, we were demonstrating our faith. A vital faith, a lively faith, a faith in living things. We're under a tree, a living thing that itself is opposed to death as a living. Sometimes there's a dog out here, they have a pro-life sign over the dog, kind of a shirt over.
So it's both your right, both your First Amendment right to speak, but also your amendment right to express your religious sentiment, to be free from, free exercise of religion.
We're not here protesting, obnoxious, just we're presenting a sign, we sign in which we have a picture
of a fetus. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. God is the quote.
Hands that would belong to another, that the eyes that this would see with. You know, here is what they would hear with.
But so, but you're okay with what the city did. You don't mind being here on the sidewalk?
Yeah. We are. And the city has been pretty kind of considerate of us, although a couple have kind of responded, you know, to the Planned Parenthood's position.
What is their position?
It's a hard position. Basically, it's hard. It's hard on the minorities. It's hard on other races.
What's their position on your protesting? What do they say about that?
Well, we are one of the protesters now. They want to get a lot of Catholics eliminated, let's face it, us included. And you, when you get older,
not quite as old as some.
Don't get any endomorphine and you have a gentle, nice death.
Yeah. One of these days. I may do that myself. But.
Comfort zone. They call it the comfort zone.
You also
No feeding.
You also noted that you asked me if I was the one who did the lawsuit against the city for the council repressive arrest around the mock Nazi salute. You have any thoughts on that?
I think there is, and they're holding back against us because of the large numbers of. They don't want to come out directly against the Catholics and those who are pro-life, so they'll go indirectly against them, and they really have a hard time. But if I were alone. Okay, if I were alone here, okay, if I were a lonely person here like you, a lonely person in the city council, then they would probably come down hard on me, too, because it's there. The potential is there, and you can see it. You can see it when the policemen come up. There is a kind of a... they respond immediately to Planned Parenthood, and they come out, and they, you know, they stay there for a while. But with time, though, they've backed off. The police have realized this.
And I'm having a little trouble with this tape again. Not quite sure why. It may just be a cranky tape. It can happen sometimes. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, local civil rights. Let's find them, and if we can't find them, let's create them before we all get undone. I'd like to apologize for the first 45 minutes. I think one of the numbers was busy, 427-3772. So if you tried to call in then and you couldn't get through, you might be able to get in now. In fact, you probably will be able to get in now, 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. If you want to catch me off air because you have some comments that are just too top secret or you just need to discuss something outside the glare of publicity, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call. There's a couple things coming up I guess we might want to mention here. There's a foreclosure fight on Sunday, by the which we mean a protest. There's going to be a Raging Granny's Street Theater, Robbie and Friends, I guess another Robbie than the petitioner Robbie guy. Bank pit stops to include mic checks. Mic check is where one person says something and everybody else repeats it loudly so other people outside that person's range of speech can hear him. It's done a lot at Occupies, Santa Cruz and other Occupies throughout the country. Or at least it used to be. Inspirational speakers, signs, chants, and drums. Again, this will start at 1 p.m. at the courthouse steps, March 11th. And it's asking Sheriff Wowak, or perhaps demanding of Sheriff Wowak, that he stop the foreclosures. Sponsors include Occupy Santa Cruz Foreclosure Working Group, WILP, Brown Berets, Resource Center for Nonviolence, Occupy Monterey, Occupy Cabrillo, and the UCSC General Assembly. Boy, it's interesting. The Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly hasn't endorsed it. I wonder why not. Maybe it just isn't on here. I would have thought they would have. Fight foreclosure fraud. Meetings happen every Saturday at 4 p.m., and you can get more information if you go to www.oscforeclosure.org. That's oscforeclosure.org, and that's they meet every Saturday at 4. Remember that daylight savings time starts on March 11th, so put your clocks ahead an hour. And other things coming up tomorrow morning. Becky Johnson, a blogger who's got some really interesting and strong analysis of the attack on homeless activists and homeless people in the last couple years. She has her own blog, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. I encourage people to go read it, particularly the homeless stuff. I don't endorse everything on it, but hey, good writing and good work. She goes to court at 8:15 on Friday morning to deal with Snake Oil Simons, who is going to be, I don't know, probably turning down yet another attorney. I don't know what's going to happen then. She's still looking for an attorney for the two felonies and two misdemeanors. She's accused of these cooked-up charges in the 75 River Street vacant bank building. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, this is John Tilking.
Hey, John.
Are you on the air?
You are on the air, Dangerous John.
Okay, well, I just want to let you know that the stream was working fine for me because I had the address saved in RealPlayer, so I just fired up RealPlayer and it's working.
So what do you suggest people do if they want to get to the Free Radio stream?
Send me an email, Pages in Color, Yahoo, and I'll send you the link.
Pages in Color?
At Yahoo.
At Yahoo. You know, maybe I can post that link on Indie Bay. That might be one way to go. I'm not quite sure what the best way to go about it is. It's, for those who don't know, we had to remove the link from the Free Radio Santa Cruz website because there was a kind of a greedy middleman pay us money if we play any music on the air that has any copyright attack on us, and we are struggling to continue to be a free radio station anyway. Again, so people should contact you at Pages in Color
at Yahoo.
At Yahoo.com?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you can find a link. Someone suggested, I think, FRSC Winamp in the as a way of getting it through Bing or through Google search engines, but I was not able to do that, so I'm not sure if that's the best way to go. So, anyway, any other thoughts, John, or...
I don't know. I'm still trying to get organized for doing something to help you out with the Santa Cruz 11. I wanted to do an email campaign at least. I finally got the article from you as to what the charges are and stuff, so I got to put that together next.
Yeah, for those who want more information, though, a lot of it could be misinformation or partial information. You can get the actual document itemizing the charges on the Sentinel website by, I think it's the... February 9th, Sentinel article. I could be wrong. I was also...
Oh, you sent me a link to something that had the list of charges on a PDF or something.
I was only able
to read the first page, though.
So. That's interesting. There's not much there to read, but, yeah, I mean, if people really are interested, I think we could post them on Indie Bay. Let me know, folks, if you're interested. I also have an email, rnorse3@hotmail.com. Just leave me a message, rnorse3@hotmail.com, and, you know, let me know what you if you'd like to see the charges posted on Indie Bay, although they're already available, I think, on the Sentinel. You say you've only been able to download one page?
Well, I don't know. Maybe my computer messed up or something, but...
Mm-hmm.
I had trouble with Internet Explorer after I loaded.
Well, I like your idea of
a Firefox on there.
I like your idea of a march to the DA's office, though. It's really hard to get people to do anything that might in any way be considered to be, upsetting of the authorities to the extent that they might want to try to threaten people with arrest and so forth.
Yeah, and I'm concerned about the latest protest on Sunday was, or Saturday, I guess it was, where they did that mock kidnapping.
Oh, I think that was, to me, that was great theater. We disagree on that one.
But
I think
I'm concerned because that protest and the last protest I tried to organize in San Jose was infiltrated by Anonymous, so I'm real leery of doing anything like that right now.
Well, yeah, I don't think, you know, I think it's...
Or a fundraiser or something.
It's really important not to be intimidated by what might here and what might there, in my view.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that... I mean, it's... I was thinking of actually doing a... I think I mentioned this to you in an email, doing a picket line in front of the 75 River Street property. I can't do it myself because one of my probation or a release conditions is I not be on the sidewalk as though I was some sort of criminal already. But I mean, other people like yourself could walk up and down with picket signs. And I was thinking of having a table across the street where we would feed people some food and raise the issue of vacant buildings still vacant 4 years later. And, you know, huge amounts of money being spent on these prosecutions and homeless people facing harassment at night for sleeping with no legal place to go, the armory about to close, and so forth. The armory being the winter shelter for homeless people.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm glad if you suggest an email campaign, that's fine, too. I wonder if, you know, I mean, I, certainly the more pressure on D.A. Bob Lee and, you know, the... Board of Supervisors and Sheriff Wowak and actually Chief Vogel. Actually, the main culprits are City Manager Martine Bernal, Chief Vogel, and DA Bob Lee. They're the three, I think. Criminals is a little strong. Let's say abusive public officials who are acting in a fascistic manner, in my view. So
let me write that down. What was those people names?
D.A. Bob Lee is one of them. He's the main D.A. I actually ran into him in the elevator the other day. We were waiting for the elevator together to go up to the fifth floor to the Board of Supervisors. Or up to that floor, actually. And
so D.A. Bob Lee and who else?
Well, the city manager is a very powerful figure in Santa Cruz. He's more powerful than the mayor. His name is Martine Bernal.
Martine.
He actually oversees the police force.
How do you spell his last name?
B-E-R-N-A-L, Bernal. And then you have B-E-R-N-A-L, Bernal. B-E-R-N-A-L, Bernal. There you go.
Okay.
And then you have the guy who's recommending in the police reports or forwarding police reports that apparently recommend prosecution, so indicating a police conspiracy or let's say inclination to prosecute people selectively out of the hundreds of people who are in that building in and out. They're picking 11 activists who, as far as I know, were uninvolved in the planning, uninvolved in the any kind of vandalism. And really, I would say also were uninvolved in trespass because when they went in, police made no attempt to advise people that they were trespassing and they would be arrested and didn't attempt to arrest them or block them from going in. Though later on, I believe no trespassing signs were posted. But then...
Bob Lee, Martin Bernal, and who else?
Chief Kevin Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. He is the chief of the police force, our local Santa Cruz police force. He's the one, yeah.
Police Chief Kevin Vogel?
That's the one, Santa Cruz Police Chief Kevin Vogel. Yeah, he's the one. And, you know...
Okay, I'll try to put that together.
Yeah, put together, if you can, get their emails, get their phone numbers so that people can register their concerns about this waste of money and time and this really chilling set of charges that they're bringing against me and others.
Right. Yeah, it's really messed up.
Anything happening over in San Jose we should know about there, John?
I don't know. There's a Green Party movie night at the Peace Center, 48 South 7th Street on Friday from 6:30 to 10. They're showing,
Well, you know,
Billionaire's Tea Party and also Hidden Internment, the Art Shibaya Moss story.
Not quite getting this, but you know, I don't know if.
Anyway, it's about internment of Japanese Latin Americans during World War II.
Yeah, no, that's important, except I don't know if anybody is going to go over the hill to San Jose. When is this happening?
Friday night at 6:30.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think there may be some things happening over here at that time as well, although let's take a look here. Nothing is, unfortunately, on the calendar. Not much going on there. Well, maybe some folks could go to the, you know, and I guess they can find it. Is it listed under the South Bay calendar? I'm taking a look.
I haven't listed it on there yet, but it's on the Innovate Peace Center website.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's not much going on at the South Bay Indie Bay calendar. That's the South Bay Indie Media. Last big story was October 24th, which is quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John. And, you know, if you get that thing going with a letter campaign or an email campaign, I say right on.
Yeah, I got to get together and do that.
And again, the place,
Peace Movies website for the last 2 days.
The place for the Japanese internment camp, I should say Japanese American internment camps during World War II movie is where?
48 South 7th Street, the Peace Center.
48 South 7th Street?
Yeah.
Peace Center, and that's at what time?
At 6:30 p.m. on Friday.
Okay, 6:30 p.m., that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good luck with that. It's probably available online, too, somewhere, that kind of a film, I imagine, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I paid $18 for my copy, so I don't know if they do it for free or not.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. And maybe we can, if people are wondering how to get the stream that used to be freakradio.org but is now not that anymore, you can go send an email to pagesincolor@yahoo.com, and John will give you the secret address.
Right.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I think it's maybe time for one of those historic musical breaks, perhaps. Or do I want to try to roll forward with... let me try a little... a little more... street interviewing while I've got the chance to kind of catch up on some older stuff. Let's see if this this serves.
We have a, should we say, a questionable report from
Hippie.
And Hippie, you say you're pointing in, well, the direction of, you're pointing towards City Hall as we're on Pacific Avenue, kind of. And he says, is the church the Red Church, perhaps?
Church right near the library.
The Greek Orthodox Church.
Yes.
And you say, what are you saying about that church?
Don't camp near there.
Because?
There was a fire there recently, some dumbass set a fire. And, yeah, you don't want to camp there because cops will be called and you will be charged for the arson of it. The security guy warned me about it.
Are you confessing right now to that arson?
No.
I thought I saw the fire in your eyes.
No, no. No, not at all.
Thank you very much. Anything?
Fire of love, man. Love and peace. All right, love you guys. Peace.
Thank you, Hippie. So I'm back here at the Hakyu Plaza. It's about 15 after 2. We have at least 5 people here, 6 counting me. At least 4 chairs.
Yeah.
And we're talking. Someone's leading. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Melissa.
I'm Robert Melissa. Who is this little
That's
person with
me on it?
And you two are local?
We lived here for the past 2 years, and I was gone for 5 months. Just got back 5 nights ago.
And what do you make of the scene now that you're back?
I like it. These guys seem to be standing up for stuff.
Or sitting down and lying down, respectively.
Well, last night, this gentleman here was doused with 1 liter of water while he was resting at night by city police. The captain came by and realized it was him who's been sitting out here for 7 days now and nights and told the cops to leave him alone.
Now, is this
looks like he's resting now.
Story you were told, or did you see this?
He told me. I believe him. I met with him a few days ago. He's... actually a veteran. He was in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was medically discharged, so he's...
You're referring, of course, to Anthony, whose white belly and underpants are gracing
him.
Us.
Yeah, so he... I believe him.
Good for you. And who is this this wailing child?
Oh, this hungry baby. That's my daughter, Mayana.
Hey. All right.
I just think that we should have the right to be able to be on the earth no matter where we are, as long as we're in peace. We shouldn't have to pay for it. And, you know, I recently got a camping in my vehicle ticket. And just
when and where did you get the ticket?
That was down in Ocean Beach, San Diego, about 10 days ago.
Did they offer you an alternate place to go?
No, they said, you cannot sleep anywhere in San Diego in your car.
Interesting. And did they say they'd received a complaint?
No. Oh, wait. Oh, they said the neighborhood people had been calling around in that neighborhood because they said, well, they pay $2,000 for their ocean view, and we don't want to watch you people sleep in here and live in for free to block their view.
Yeah, I can't.
So.
Interesting. What are you going to do with that ticket?
I'm not going to pay it. I'm going to write a letter.
No.
I just want to word it correctly.
Fair enough. Again, we've been talking with...
Melissa. I don't want to give my last name.
No problem. Thanks, Melissa. The first time you've been to Occupy.
Yeah, first time.
And this is the first time you've been to Occupy.
Yes.
Is that a yes?
Say hi.
If you want. This child is looking at the mic with a certain quizzical expression. Here we have Isaac, well-known, recently evicted from his quarters by Ken, one of the... actually, it's an interesting division in the Occupy movement. Has that been worked out yet, or is it still a sore point?
Honestly, it's all good. I collected more money from him, and I decided to squash it, you know. I'm still a little bitter about it, but at the end of the day, it's over with, and I'm happy where I'm at. Mr. Nicholas has gave me a place to stay, rent-free, to help him out, so I'm very happy on that.
And it also seems you are... reoccupying here in front of the Occuplazia courthouse.
Yeah, this is my second day. You know, this man, Mr.
Anthony,
you know, he's been out here for 8 days, and when I heard he was out here, I told myself I'll come out here for 3 to 4 hours of my time to give him my support, and that's pretty much how it is. I'm going to be showing him love every day.
You're here.
Yeah.
Any way people can reach you if they want to get updates on what's going on?
Yeah, they can reach me through my phone number, which I'll give out now, 831-431-7165, or they can come in the front of the Occupy, which I'll be here Monday through Sunday.
So. During what time of day?
The time? Well, I'll be here between noon and 4.
Fair enough. And that's, of course, the period of time we're in now.
Yes.
Thank you, Isaac, and may humanity be with you.
Yeah, and I'm just glad, you know, that we still have some true occupiers still out here. You know, I'm glad to still help out the front line, and it feels good. You know, it's a lot of power, but it feels good to be here and having the people see me here and letting them know that we haven't stopped occupying. We're still here. So.
Fair enough. And who is this sitting next to you, another criminal occupier?
Actually, this man is Mr. T.O. You know, he's a fellow artist, lyricist, public speaker, MC. You know, I'm working on an album with him right now. I have him over here because I told him we're going to work on music.
Drawing him into your criminal enterprise?
I'm just showing him what it is to write some real stuff and show him my side, you know, who I am. So he's over here with me, having a little writing session and seeing, you know, how I used to do it. And
let's get his perspective, shall we? What's your name, sir?
Tito.
And Tito, this is your first sit down here at Occupy?
No, I was actually at the one in Wall Street when that started off. And then I went to the one here, and then the one in Oakland, and the Berkeley one, but I was dying out.
Here you are again.
Yeah.
How long have you been at this one?
Since like 12 o'clock.
So are you reoccupying, or are you just kind of accompanying Isaac? Or?
I mean, I'm accompanying him, but I didn't know there was anybody here, and now I'm here. I see someone else here. I'm going to, like, occupy with him. I mean, like,
I know what you mean.
Everybody creates the space. I mean.
Or uses the public space as we should have the right to do.
Yeah. I'm using it right now just to make an album, just find creation, like, inspiration from the movement, some ideas to keep it flowing, because I feel like when the Occupy movement was going, I was speaking more about the topics that were coming up here, and it just gave me more energy because I felt the vibe of everybody else.
Thanks, and again, we've been talking with...
Huh?
Your name again?
Tito.
Thanks, Tito. And again, in front of all these folks, there's a table that's a sign that says February 24th, 2012, day 150 OSC, Occupy Santa Cruz needs blankets, art supplies, water, hot coffee, food, intercom, battery-operated radio. And there's a lot of literature on the table. Open letter from the General Assembly about the... First Amendment not requiring a permit, a press release from December 7th, wake up against the crackdown, conspiracy to commit journalism, and mention of the arraignments coming up next week.
Some of the flyers actually are ones I've written. We are one, the economy, the book Deep Economy, and several generic Occupy flyers, Occupy Santa Cruz among them. And that is the update here. A lot of signs, well, a number of signs. Corporations are not people. And the signs that were on the fence when I was here, I guess last night, have been apparently removed, one would suspect by security personnel, but you never can be sure. And that's the update from Occu Plaza. It's February 24th, about 2:30. So this is a recording, Becky, that you made about who?
Let's see. The date on it was February 22nd, and it was made at the what I call the ABC room at the Civic Auditorium. But
and actually, what Becky did was she recorded one of the part of the actually she recorded the whole session, but we had some difficulty kind of putting it together. There's been a series of homelessness quote classes on homelessness by Mayor Don Lane. Rather tightly controlled classes, I understand, at the Civic Auditorium's ABC room, or the Tony Hill room, as it's also called. The little room that's to the right of the Civic Auditorium, the right side of it as you walk in. And that's the big building, kitty corner from the main library, across from City Hall at Center and Church Streets. And every Wednesday at 7:30, they've had one of these classes. And there was one yesterday. I believe Steve Plaich attended that class. I may actually give him a call now, try to get an update on how things went there and how things have been going at the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly. And again, I mentioned before earlier in the show, there is a foreclosure march coming up that's been pretty carefully prepared for. It's gotten a lot of publicity. It will be happening at 1 o'clock, starting at the Occupy Plaza, the area in front of the courthouse. On the Water Street side, where you used to see the Occudome and lots of folks occupying there in tents and so forth that were driven away by deputies and other authorities. There hasn't really been a persistent occupation, but there has been a sporadic occupation in the last couple weeks, spearheaded by Anthony, who you heard referred to. That last set of interviews was from February 24th, I believe. I'm kind of running short on time, so what I'm going to do in kind of acknowledgement of his time in jail, I'm going to play an interview that I may have played before by Gary Johnson. Now, Gary is a guy who's... You can read about him on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. He slept on a bench outside the courthouse with a sign that said sleep is not a crime, in order to dramatize the fact that homeless people in this city are penalized for sleeping at night by being criminalized. And not all of them get arrested. Very few of them do. Not all of them get ticketed. Very few of them get ticketed. But they can get harassed. They can get humiliated. They can get woken up. Their property can be confiscated. They face second, third-class citizenship, and they can't sleep together in any numbers nor for safety because that will be dispersed as the San Lorenzo campground was dispersed. And this is essentially destroying people's survival behavior and making it more likely that they're going to run into real health and safety problems. And Gary was acutely aware of this because he's been homeless himself, outside, houseless. And he was not a part of Occupy Santa Cruz per se. He was independent of that. He was a part of a prior demonstration called Peace Camp 2010, which I talked about at some length. He was arrested, taken to jail, is currently in Watsonville awaiting trial on March 19th, when his attorney, Ed Fry, will come back and he'll be tried in Department 2. Trial will start, or jury selection will start at 9 o'clock. On the 19th of March. That's not too far off. But I wanted to play a little something from Gary when I interviewed him. He has his own website, actually, as well. It's called peacecamp2010insider.blogspot.com if you want to check out his website. That's Peace Camp 2010 Insider. And I just want to play a bit of an interview I had with him to remind folks of what he sounds like, what his thoughts were. He's inside jail. Nobody hears from him now except he gets taken to the court in chains every month or so to face a new hearing, most recently a demurrer hearing in the court of Justice-Free Judge John Gallagher. Justice-Free John, as I call him. Actually, it should be. It's a little confusing. You don't get free justice. It's just you don't get justice at all in the court of Gallagher, at least on this issue for homeless people. But let's hear a little bit from Gary.
Plastic Mom, we're here with the God Doesn't Make Rules Against Sleep protest. Your name, protester?
Gary Johnson. And that's all I have to say.
Yes.
My full name and nothing else.
Wait, wasn't there a classic moment you were mentioning?
Yeah, so I just rolled out, right? Because it's seven. I was killing time over there. And Joe's really cool, by the way. He brought by some food. And
Joe's Pizza?
No, come on. He
Joe of the protest.
Yeah, so he hooked up Occupy with some food, right? And I was just kicking, killing time till 7 o'clock to come over here. So I come over here and I'm laying down and like 2 minutes ago, first alarm guys come walking up and I can
three hear of them, right?
Yeah, I can hear them and they're talking, going, "We'll just be mellow to people and, you know, check them," and they're talking about their strategy as they're approaching.
Uh-huh.
And then they stop and look at me and I go, I recognize one of them from every night this week, pretty much. And he goes, "You know, you can't sleep here." And I go, "Yeah, I know, it's a protest." And the other guy gets all burly, walks up, "What are you doing?" And I'm not occupied. And he kind of paused. I go, "No, this is a sleep protest."
He's getting confused. Is that the idea?
Yeah, he looked pretty tripped out. And then I started talking about the screwed up laws I have going on. And they started getting pissed, like, as they walked off. Like, "Don't talk about the laws," or I don't even know what they said. And then what did they do when they got around the corner? Did they hassle you guys?
No, they haven't hassled. They haven't hassled us yet.
I just
arrived. Actually, they haven't been by. There've been no police problems over at the Occupy area.
Not yet.
But apparently,
the first alarm. That just walked
first alarm just arrived. They were walking. We passed them as we walked by to see if there were still scofflaws in the area lying down without a permit. So I see this is a very small sign. God doesn't make rules against sleep. You're lying on the bench-ish area around the tree, which is on the island in front of the main entrance of the courthouse. And the weather is very seasonable. I mean, you may not even need a sleeping bag, but
well,
I have...
They took it, and it's over in Live Oak, and then they took my stuff last night and left it here. And when I asked them for my stuff, they thought it was the stuff from the arrest last night, and they didn't have it, so they looked a little panicked.
So you were arrested last night and held for 5 hours?
Yes.
And then when you got out from the jail around, what, 3:30 or 4?
It was like 2:33.
You came over here, and you found that your stuff had been left behind by the deputies?
Yes.
In a negligent manner?
It might have been being nice, like he was trying to help me out because he knew I was going to come back here.
Or nice to the next person happened to come along and want to take it.
And want to protest, sure.
Right.
So, yeah, it was actually, I got to finish the night warm, and it was all good.
Now, what about now? Do you have your sleeping bag? Are you ready to sleep if necessary?
They still have my sleeping bag. I do have a sleeping or a blanket I could borrow, but they're just going to take it, so why lose somebody's blanket? So I've done this once before already this year, so sleeping without any blankets or anything. So it's doable, and hopefully it's nice tonight.
Can I book a world record stuff?
No.
How many nights can I sleep and not get pneumonia?
I should say it's February. We're talking about 2 months ago.
No, I figure if they're going to take my stuff and not give it back, why give them more stuff? Then they'll just throw away more of somebody else's stuff. This way, at least, I save everybody time.
Well, I do have a sleeping bag in the car should you decide you want one tonight.
Well, if you don't mind losing it.
Well, I would like you to try to reclaim it, if you can.
There's the rub, because they keep telling me the next time they take me in, they're going to call up a judge and say, "Let's pull his bail." And
well,
if that happens, I'm gone for 4 months,
well,
if not more.
If it's held in evidence, that's fine. But we want to make sure they don't simply discard it like they discarded lots of other property on December 8th.
Right. That is definitely a problem. I mean, sure, I can do what I can to make sure that doesn't happen.
It's really up to you. If you want to come to the car and get the bag, it's right over there.
See, I'll put it in your car. I'll be here, and if it shows up, fine. If not...
Fair enough. And I may or may not decide to come back, depending upon adventures over on the other side.
It was so exciting. I saw them forming up and running over. Well, they walked. They sauntered over in the direction of Occupy.
We're going to saunter over and see what's going on.
Check out the guy with the light rig. They got an awesome overhead projector.
I saw that. It's also interesting that all the area that has been fenced off from the public with the orange mesh, suddenly the mesh is gone.
What?
Yes.
You're kidding.
Well, I think it was removed by people or persons unknown.
Well, I don't want to help anybody with any evidence, but I walked over here at precisely 7 because I heard the bell tolling, and Becky was waving at me as a sheriff drove by.
What's being referred to here is that the area around the courthouse and the county building has all been declared off-limits after 7 o'clock at night. And the lawn area along Water Street on both sides of the cement walkway up to the entrance of the courthouse isn't really an entrance, more of an emergency exit now. It used to be an entrance 30 years ago on Water Street where Occupy Santa Cruz would hold its general assemblies. There was orange mesh fencing that has now been taken down, that was taken down that night. I would suspect by Occupy sympathizers or people who felt that there was a constitutional issue in putting up a mesh to try to keep people out of areas that they should have by right access to. And I believe, however, that orange mesh is still up today, that there is still orange mesh. Although the orange mesh around the San Lorenzo campground area, which is the area on the benchlands right on below the courthouse, as I believe that mesh has been removed. So that area is now free for the public to walk on again, provided you don't go there after dark. As we know, all parks in Santa Cruz are closed after dark.
I said, there goes my ride. I got to get over here. And I laid out at almost precisely 7, and there was orange fence when I walked by.
Now, when I arrived, it was all rolled up very neatly by the side of the...
It might be biodegradable.
It's certainly degrading, for sure.
Or self-folding?
It's not to that effect.
Nice!
We've been talking with...
Somebody that's amazed with the state of technology today.
Thank you there, Ground Zero, Gary.
Thank you.
Well, we're returning to the Occupy site in front of the courthouse. It's about 15 to 8, and there's some first alarm folks here and a number of Occupy folks. Hey, join us, guys. Join us. Your Constitution's at stake. Come on.
Oh, yeah. They just yelled at me for taking a picture.
They yelled at you?
They said, did you know it's illegal for taking a picture without someone's permission? I said, well, no, it's not right now. I'm protesting. And if you're in a uniform, I'm taking a picture of you.
You know, if he's in a public place, there's no expectation of privacy, I believe. That's my understanding.
And this was the area right around the corner from where Gary was sleeping on the bench and has now been charged with 4 counts of illegal lodging for sleeping on the bench. I believe it's 4 counts. Originally arrested for trespass, but then they would notice that in the trespass statute for which he was arrested, there is a provision that says First Amendment activities are exempt one from this kind of so-called, if they can't call it a crime if it's a First Amendment activity. So they shifted the charge, and they've been holding him on a $5,000 bail in Watsonville for the last 2 months. And he goes to trial, as I said, March 19th. I then walked around this is back in January, I walked around to the occupiers who were, again, some of whom were defying the curfew because they believe it to be, as I do, unconstitutional. And it's still up. I confronted Susan Mariello, who's the chief administrative officer who created this curfew, or her office did. She's the person who is responsible for it, for keeping it going, because she has the power to change it, and she's not changing it. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, she had no comment. Actually, I did so publicly, and a number of us spoke, many about the foreclosure march, that again will be happening on Sunday, starting at 1 o'clock, at the Occuplaza, the area at Water Street, in front of the courthouse. Got a couple of things I wanted to read. I was doing some stuff in the past, interviews on the smart meter issue, the issue of whether one should have the right to opt out of smart meters, or whether one shouldn't have to pay extra amounts of money, whether there are health issues, whether PG&E is allowing a really public accessible process, why there was a recall movement against Sheriff Wowak, which I guess has ended, that was concerned that he was not enforcing the law that the supervisors passed banning the installation of these smart meters, which some feel are not only damaging to your health, but also unreliable in terms of their accounts, how much money they claim you owe, and also have been responsible, some claim, for fires. Are essentially arrogantly put in by PG&E over the wishes of people who don't want them. Here's a story on Indy Bay. I'm going to read a little bit of it, but I think we're almost at the end of our time, and I suspect Uncle Dennis is going to come floating into the studio soon. Lately, there have been a series of newspaper articles from Marin, Bakersfield, San Francisco, and elsewhere covering breathless press releases from PG&E, claiming that hardly anyone is signing up for their smart meter opt-out program. Of course, PG&E is delighted with these articles, as it makes those opposed to smart meters seem like a tiny minority, a depiction that PG&E and the California Public Utilities Commission, CUPUC, have repeatedly sought to promote. Despite tens of thousands of complaints pouring into the to CUPUC, and more than 50 cities and counties in California representing millions of people on record as opposed to smart meters. If you'll notice, there's very rarely any room in the corporate media for the positive coverage of ordinary people, particularly in large numbers, rebelling against authority. The assumption is that if very few people are signing up for PG&E's so-called opt-out scheme, which means you don't want to put in a smart meter, you want to keep the analog meter that's currently in place, then most are happy with their smart meters. No matter how outrageous the policy is, that's our government, and most of the media assumes that people will just go along with it. That storyline could not be farther from the truth. Instead of asking how many people are signed up to pay hundreds of dollars to keep their analogs, what the media should be asking instead is how many analogs remain out in the field. The answer is, at least as far as PG&E territory in Northern California goes, more than a million out of roughly 10 million customers. Millions more analogs remain in perfect working order in areas of Southern California and beyond. According to PG&E's own report to the CUPEC, California Public Utilities Commission, in January, increasing numbers of installations affected by access refusals, increased costs, increase in unable to complete backlog, customer change management. In other words, there are likely more than a million households holding out against the evil smart meter throughout Northern California, and most of these people are not signing up for PG&E's extortionate opt-out program, which costs you more money. They're also not going to allow a smart meter on their home or business anytime soon. The media coverage would suggest that the furor over smart meters has subsided and that the CUPEC approved a compromise opt-out program that only a few Californians seem to be taking advantage of. But the reality is that there is a conflict simmering, ready to explode into full boil if PG&E tries to start disconnecting people's power again or sending fully paid bills to collection agencies. Whatever PG&E's intended rationale for the smart meter opt-out program, the real result is that a whole lot of people who have been ignoring the issue, somehow thinking that good sense would prevail eventually, are now engaging in it, reading the health reports and connecting the dots. And these mainstream ordinary people are mad as hell and joining the fight, which has now gone international. In response to the increase in access refusals, PG&E is cranking up the propaganda machine into overtime, or as they say in PG&E's, engaging with the customer. Pursuing operational improvements to increase efficiency of unable to complete resolution, ongoing engagement with customers across multiple communication channels to enhance customer understanding of smart meter program and benefits. But as we know, there is very little that PG&E or anyone else can do to make people understand the benefits of a device that is causing headaches and nausea, that emits radiation that the WHO and NIH, World Health Organization and National Administration of Health, have found to have serious biological impacts, that invades your privacy and ignites your house on fire. It's sort of like a rapist trying to get his victim to understand the benefits of having sex with him and then charging a fee to avoid it. From the same report, we also learn that the removal of smart meters from one's home has become common enough throughout PG&E's service territory to warrant a whole section in their smart meter report. And there's more to the story, but we do have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Is Uncle Dennis there?
Not yet. If you call in about 5 minutes, you will get Uncle Dennis. And caller, do call back, because I know that Uncle Dennis enjoys these chats with you. I just wanted to finish this article, though, and be out of the studio before Uncle Dennis beats me up, as, well, you never can tell when that is going to happen. That Uncle Dennis is a burly guy. Um, Another nugget of information confirms that the wireless mesh network is rife with basic operational problems. Despite widespread installation of smart meters, many meter readers are being retained to read wireless meters where the signal isn't being received in areas that are remote or hilly, just as we've heard about in Marin and elsewhere. And this article goes on at some length. And it sounds like we do have somebody knocking at the door. Who could that be at the door? Here's some sort of obscene comments coming from the doorway. I'm going to have to put on some music. I want to thank you for being with me in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Tune in again on Sunday. I'll be back, and I'll talk to you at 9:30 in the morning, and we'll chat some more. In the meantime, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. If you have questions, 423-4833.
Come as quickly as they leave. There's just something not quite right here, and I've tried the blue pill and I've had my share of the red, but nothing can ease this itch at the back of my head. Oh, what a clever trick to pull the wool over our eyes, tell us to wait patiently until we're dead to get the better life. Well, I guess they meant it when they